We will stay locally and have Deputy Mayor Mick Renheisen help us out with local government. As he does, we check in at City Hall every Thursday just after 4:05. Mick, good afternoon. How are you?
I'm doing well, guys. Good afternoon to both of you as well.
Thank you for joining us, as always. And we start the program, as we usually do, with golf. And we were back at the Muirfield Village Country Club, golf club, rather, in Dublin, Ohio. That's the home of Jack Nicklaus's golf course that he designed and built with his own hands and own money. And for the second week in a row, they are playing this course for tour purposes. But this week is the Memorial Tournament, which is usually played in the last weekend of May, early June. And a little bit different conditions today with some wind and some firmness on the greens and some other things going on. A little bit different golf than we've seen, Mick, over the last 5 weeks.
Different time of year. It's bound to rain, as it always does in Dublin, Ohio at this time of year. So they'll probably get some of that over the course of the next several days. The rough is thicker than last week, which they let it grow, and the greens will be faster. So it's, even though it's the same place, it's not the same course.
You're exactly right.
The wind throws another wild card into the mix there for sure.
And the other part about this is terribly interesting, and you will find this terribly interesting. I'm not sure Keith will. On Monday, they were scheduled, have been scheduled. So you asked me last week, why are they going to play back-to-back weeks here? On Monday, they are ripping it all up tee to green and regrassing the entire property.
Whoa.
So, you know why that's good, Mick? Well, let's get that stimp meter up to 15. Let's burn those greens out because you don't have to save them for the members on Monday. Fairways, don't water them. Doesn't matter. We're ripping them out on Monday. Let's. It is British Open week. We should be at Royal St. George's. Let's turn Muirfield tan and pretend we're playing a different golf tournament.
Well, just as long as we don't go quite as far as Chambers Bay a few years ago, that was not quite the conditions that I think the professionals appreciated, and it didn't look very good on TV either.
No, it did not. A little too much tan for everybody to understand, and there were no trees there. That was the other very odd point about that Lynx course on Puget Sound from the U.S. Open back in 2015. Your pick last week was...
Who did I pick last week?
That's what I was trying to remember, too. You hadn't looked at, or you already had looked at the leaderboard, so you did not make a pick. That's it.
Well, and I have not looked this week, and I felt like Justin Thomas let one slip away, and he would probably feel the same way. And because he's such a quality player, I'm sure he worked really hard to try to make a few corrections. So I'm going to say Justin Thomas on the same course twice as well as he played last week. Having said that, still losing in a playoff, I'm gonna go with Justin Thomas this week.
Is that your final answer?
Yeah, I don't know. He could be plus something and out of it already.
Well,
but there's lose the tournament on your first day. I don't think
there's plenty of people plus something because, as you mentioned, this course is playing difficult. Justin Thomas played with Dustin Johnson and did they play with Morikawa this morning? Who else? Somebody in their group at one point they were a combined 10 over. They struggled, but Thomas rallied. He is 2 over 74. That's tied for 68th right now. So that's not terrible, and I'll explain to you why. He played with Xander Schauffele and Dustin Johnson. Dustin Johnson shot 80, and Xander Schauffele shot 78. So he was the medalist in the group comfortably by four.
Tough conditions. If those three were the collective.
A million over.
Over at the end of the day.
Little breezy this morning there. That's what stirred things up. Ricky Fowler is 6 over through 10. Webb Simpson is 5 over through 12. Those are some of the other big heavy hitters. Leading the way is U.S. Open champion Gary Woodland. He is 5 under through 12. He's playing in the late flight, obviously. He is alone atop the leaderboard. Chasing him down in the afternoon is Lucas Glover. He is 4 under. Jimmy Walker, we haven't heard much from Jimmy Walker. He and Tony Finau are 3 under. That's the best of your afternoon group. Justin Rose is minus 2. Tiger Woods started with 2 birdies and 3 holes. He is even as he made the turn. Tiger is now through 10, even 2 birdies, 2 bogeys, along with McIlroy. It's McIlroy, Woods, and Brooks Koepka. That's the featured group this afternoon, as you can hear me beep in the background trying to figure this out. Koepka is 1 over, so a little bit better than what we saw earlier today. All right, Keith, we have plenty to do, a full boat. Every time I drive to work, Mick, I go right by your parking garage at 4th Street, And Walnut, there is plenty of activity and things going up in, around, and everything else. And there looks to be an extra price tag perhaps on top of that, as the Herald Times is reporting this afternoon. Juan didn't sell is the headline. Now city owes $62,000 in legal fees. So we'll start at the corner of 4th and Walnut to get things started here on a Thursday.
Sure. So we are making progress, and the first part of construction at the 4th Street Garage is drilling for the piers that will be set. Those will be the structural support systems where all of the decks will be poured and layered one on top of another, much like the Trades District now at least level 3, I think, is coming out of the ground behind the showers building. You'll see a similar type of transition at the 4th Street Garage. So yes, to the other fact of the matter is, if you lose a lawsuit, again, the city tried to get the property that you mentioned to have a larger garage footprint from Mr. Carrasquel, and we were not able to do that, and we lost the court case. And so, like anybody else, if you lose a court case, there are attorney's fees to be paid, and that is public information, and that's the correct amount that we are paying to Mr. Carrasquel and his attorneys for losing the case. I would just remind everybody, we felt like we had a strong appellate case to make and just chose not to delay the garage any longer. There would have been additional cost to delay. Certainly there would have been an economic impact on a negative basis for our community in the delay in having a garage built, and we just didn't think it was worth it. Even though we still don't agree with the decision, we've decided to move on and build the structure that you now see coming out of the ground.
What are you looking at, Mick, for the anticipated completion date? What are we going to see? The reason I'm asking is because when I was in Chicago at one point, they actually laid a floor and then literally jacked it up to where it was supposed to be, and then laid the next floor on top of that and jacked it up to the next highest level. That's not what you're doing in this garage, is it?
We are not, and I think those construction techniques may be related to areas that have more density around them, difficult buildings to build around. We have enough space in the closed off lanes on 4th and on Walnut Street to allow for a little bit easier constructible and probably more cost affordable than the jacking up the floors procedure that you mentioned. That's an interesting way of doing it, but we won't have to do that here. Our completion date is before August 1st of 2021. And that's a very critical date for us because that is when we start to sell permits for garages in our system. So we're back. We've always back-timed everything to try to have the garage done by then. I just saw the projected schedule today, and it assures as much as can be assured that that's the target date to get it done. We have built in some days for weather and unexpected things that happen. Once you get out of the ground, as they say, you get vertical, then there's less probability that there will be any big, long delays. So it's things that come out of the ground at the beginning phase of a project that usually cost you time. And so we'll hope that the next couple of weeks and months to get us out of the ground will not have any surprises, and then it should go pretty smoothly from there.
Mick, are you ever fearful that we'll have too many parking spaces after so many people might change their working patterns with our current climate in business and with COVID?
Sure, that's a legitimate question, something none of us could have seen until 4 months ago.
You can't call them up and say, hey, we only want 4 floors, not 5. We're just kidding about 5
right.
floors.
Well, here's how I think that would play out. And that's a great question, Mike. And if that were the case and parking demand shifted, then I think you would see our surface lots go away first. And that's common best practices, is to get rid of the surface lots and turn those into some other economic activity, whether that's office space or housing or whatever. You know, we've got quite a few surface lots still in the city, and those would be the first things you would see converted. And then therefore those spaces would be gone, and we could turn that demand into the parking structure. So I think that's the strategy we would deploy if in fact parking demand goes down because of COVID and because people have learned how to, as we've discussed before, maybe work without having the same need for square footage that they used to in office environments.
We're speaking with Mick Renneisen, the deputy mayor of the city of Bloomington. And Mick, remind our listeners, because there were so many iterations of, well, there'll be space for this, there'll be an art gallery, there'll be elevators on both sides, there'll be office space. What is public restrooms? What is actually going to be in there now that it's being built?
Yeah, that's also a good question. It's easy to lose sight of that with the time it took us to get through the court case. So none of those features have been lost to the redesign. We just simply compressed the footprint of the building. So we had to go more vertical because we couldn't go out as far because we didn't get the 222 South Walnut property. So because of that, the 505, I think it is, parking spaces that we'll end up having are on one more floor than we thought because of that compression. We'll still have a public restroom. We'll still have bike lockers and bike racks. We'll still have charging stations for electric vehicles. We'll still have art elements on the entire garage surface. We'll still have a solar array on top of the structure. And we'll still have commercial space, although that too has contracted because of the footprint again a little bit. And that's probably a good thing given the amount of unused commercial space now. Adding more to that market would not be good. Our parking services office will be there, and that was always the plan. So that way we'll be able to more readily on site manage that structure and our other structures in the downtown area. So haven't lost any features, just a different footprint.
Mick Renheisen, the deputy mayor of the city of Bloomington, checks in with us every Thursday just after 4:05. And a busy Thursday today at noon this afternoon. John Hamilton, the mayor, and a 27-minute Facebook presentation laid out some of the groundwork. Well, didn't really lay it out, kind of reinforced what he had been talking about, Mick, and gave us kind of a roadmap on how we're going to get from here to 2022. Plus, he had some interesting thoughts on the county's health department and what we need to do moving forward. This all wraps itself together. I'm going to let you summarize it a little bit better than I can, but we've talking about climate change and what we're doing to mitigate that, social and racial justice, obviously, affordable housing and creating opportunities in the job market for folks, and super obviously making sure we knock out COVID-19.
Right. So the mayor had a lot on his mind and he wanted to address the community. You mentioned the 27-minute speech that he gave that's online now, posted on our city's website, and you'll be able to see it readily on the first page if you happen to have missed it and don't find it on Facebook or find it on YouTube, which is also the two other locations you could get it. So essentially, we're getting ready to take an appropriation ordinance to the council next week. That is the start of the discussion about how we would like to invest $2 million from money we saved out of last year's budget. That's called reversions in our world. And because the department saves some money, typically we share it with them and we put some in reserves and we let them redeploy half of the money they saved in ways that they couldn't have planned for when they built their budgets 18 months before the actual budget took place. We did not do that this year because COVID hit right about the time we would have deployed those reversions spending monies. Instead, we held on to it, and it's a good thing we did because now we would deploy it and are going to suggest deploying it differently to invest in our community to help our economy recover. Mayor's calling that recovering forward. So about a $2 million investment in three major buckets: sustainable quality of life. Those are going to be mobility enhancements and things along those lines, investing in some energy efficiency savings in not city buildings, but actually in homes. That's where the racial and social equity piece comes in a bit too, because we're targeting people in our community that don't always have the resources to accomplish some of these things and therefore pay an inordinate amount of the cost related to renting or home ownership in infrastructure that needs to be repaired. And it could be more energy efficient. That's like giving yourself a raise. You don't have to pay the same electric, water, and gas bill if you have efficient ways of having your appliances and other things in good working order. So there'll be a series of investments. Again, a sustainable quality of life is part of that. Affordable housing is another part. And the third part has just escaped my memory for a second, which is hard to believe since we've been working on this for a while. I'll come back to it. And that will be discussed starting on July 22nd with the City Council Sustainability Committee.
Yeah, the affordable housing and the small nonprofit, making sure we have jobs created, the arts.
Good new jobs is the third bucket.
And that's a plenty of buckets because this bucket has to last almost over 3 years, Mick, correct?
So this first investment is for 2020. So this is why it's an appropriation ordinance. We anticipate coming back with another $2 million investment in 2021 as part of our budget proposal. This would be dipping into our reserves for 2021 and then in another investment in 2022. So we do anticipate, based on the experiences I think a lot of us shared in the recession from 2008, that our community will not necessarily be hit as hard in the first years. It'll be the next couple of years where the economic downturn might occur in our university community, at least based on our previous experience, even though we're feeling some of it right now. And so our plan is to invest some additional reserve monies over the course of the next 3 years.
And as we look at the this is not new information. We've been talking about this, all of us, over the last, 6 months or so. I think was today just a refocusing perhaps on, we know we have the COVID dealings right now, but here's how we, again, recovering forward. This was the forward part, right?
That's right. So you also are aware that the city invested $2 million from its food and beverage tax proceeds to deploy earlier this year. All of us didn't know how long COVID was going to impact our economy. Well, we now know it's not over. It doesn't look like it's going to be over in the short term. That's why we are now putting together a plan that calls for a multi-year investment approach. The mayor calls it countercyclical. I think, you know, for most of us, that just simply means when there's pain points in the business sectors and other parts of our economy, government has to come in, step in, and invest. And that's what the federal government's done as well with the CARES Act and some other things. So this is our version of a local CARES Act. It's just more specific to the needs of our community over the course of the next 3 years, 20, 21, and 22.
Now, the other part of this, which was interesting that I found, was at one point for climate change and everything else, you wanted to have a one half of 1% addition to the local income tax. You can help me out with the particulars here. But Mayor Hamilton came out today and said because of everything that's going on, maybe just a 0.25% would be better.
Right. So that's reacting again. We still think that one of our challenges in our community, in our state, in our country, in our world is climate change. And that hasn't gone away. COVID has just occupied all the airspace and discussion about things. So in the meanwhile, we're now coming back and saying that potential investment that needs an additional tax to invest in for the future, not just a one-time deal like these investments we're talking about recovering forward, may require an additional tax, and that would come from the local income tax option that that we could increase here. And so the mayor's cut that in half, and it's not something that we're eminently going to do. We have to talk to the city council, the county council, and Ellisville's town council before that can happen. But he's just putting it out there that that discussion hasn't gone away because climate change impacts haven't gone away either.
Go ahead, Keith.
Mick, we were talking earlier, and Mike was talking about the temperatures next week. And he also said that there's going to be some repair work at the splash pad.
Right. So, you know, we're kind of getting the whole park turned over to us from the contractor Weddle Brothers in bits and pieces. So when the splash pad was turned over so we could open it earlier, it was in kind of our sense of urgency. It's summer. We didn't open the pools. We wanted kids to be able to play and have some water to safely interact with. And during the course of its use, which is a great way to test something, is actually put a bunch of kids on it, find out what's not quite done. There were a couple of things that needed to be leveled out in the surface. So it's just typical punch list, they call it, end of project work that you finish up. Once it's in use, you kind of discover what those challenges are. Nothing that's terribly unsafe, or we wouldn't have opened it at all. But now that we've discovered some of the surfacing, which is made up of a bunch of different pieces of block type material, have been unlevel, and they've moved around a little bit. We just need to straighten that out. So the contractor has to shut it down for a few days. It'll be right back open after that.
Few days, you said?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Let me ask you another question. Are there any more changes coming to the downtown market? You increase the number of people who could come in. You let them come in, all those things. Anything else going to be changing there?
I don't think so for the foreseeable future. We have been happy to see that the last couple of weekends have resulted in increased numbers of folks that are coming down and shopping like they used to without having to do pre-orders online. That's still possible to order online, and it's also an option to come down and shop like you used to, with the COVID procedures in place. So we had 1,340 folks come to the market last weekend. That was the biggest number we've had so far this year. And there were 42 vendors. So that's good. We know there are two other markets out there that people can choose to go to, and some of the vendors have. But we still have 42 solid vendors and an increasing number of folks that are going down on Saturdays.
And Mick, what constitutes a successful market? Does it have to be a number of vendors, a number of participants, or as long as everything runs smoothly?
Yeah, that's a great question. It's a little bit of all of those. I mean, this market, Marsha Veldman's retirement announcement was in the paper today too. You know, Marsha and I have worked together for a long time as a longtime dedicated parks employee and completely the heart and soul of the farmers market. And she will be missed greatly when she retires from working at the farmers market and from the city. You know, when she first started 26 years ago, there were 45,000 customers at the market over the course of the year. That got up to 250,000. And so what does it mean? Is it unsuccessful at 45 and extremely successful at 250? Sure, but, you know, conditions have changed. You could have not taken any of this year's conditions with COVID and applied them to a normal evaluation of a program. So I think Parks is going to run the market for the balance of the year, and just like they do every year, evaluate it, see what trends are out there, see how the other farmers markets in the community are doing, and then make a decision about what to do for next year.
Mick, as long as COVID-19 looms on the horizon, what about things like entertainment, places where people can go and have booths and things like that? How about all those things?
Well, there's some modifications coming that actually start tomorrow night. So usually at this time of year, there would be some movies in the park. And the first one of those will be on Friday, July 17th at Bryan Park. And that movie is Toy Story, by the way. And normally you could just show up, throw your lawn chair down, and watch the movie for free. You can still watch for free, but you can't just show up. We need you to reserve in advance a ticket. It's still free, but we have to manage the capacity to 150 people. So Parks is asking you all to, if you're interested, you'll need to reserve a ticket in advance online. And you can do that by going to the Parks website, bloomington.in.gov/parks, or you can call 812-349-3700 Monday through Friday from 8 to 5 and reserve your ticket. So that'll be the first time we've done it this way. And so the public knows there'll be pods identified in the Bryan Park grass so that you can keep socially distant. You do have to wear a mask unless you're under two, and there'll be other provisions to make sure everybody's kept safe in that environment. So that'll be the first effort to try to manage to a capacity of 150 in an outdoor environment movies. We're also doing that for a concert that will be next week, Sunday, the live concert by the Hammer and the Hatchet and the Long Seasons that will occur at 5:30 at Bryan Park will have the same ticketing process online. So if you're interested in either of those events, go to the park website or give them a call, reserve your ticket, and know that we'll have the social distancing and mask wearing in place for both those events.
Woof! It's going to be hot on Sunday, Mick. 95 degrees. That should encourage social distancing right there if you are camping out on the face of the sun. Which is happening. All right, we put you through the ringer pretty well today. One last thing will be we're expecting the health
director,
Pentecostal, and everybody. We're gonna have some changes become official tomorrow. Would that be an accurate description?
I think that's right. I think we anticipate a mask-wearing requirement, maybe some alterations to the bar environment in terms of how services provided, maybe some modifications to gathering sizes. I think we all know the reasons for all of those things.
Preventative medicine, that's why.
About to welcome, well, we've watched what's going on around the country. So, you know, let's learn from the mistakes others have made. We're also very aware and happy that our students are coming back, but we're also a little wary of them coming back. And we know that they'll have high degrees of regulations on campus. We need to kind of mimic that as much as we can off campus so that it's uniform, consistent, and everybody can be protected.
Yeah, and there's no oops, I didn't know, or that, yeah. If we're all on the same page, we're all on the same page, and that makes sense. Well.
You ready?
No, I'm ready. Let me get my crayon.
He's getting his razor blade out, so if he has to slit his wrist.
No, gee whiz. No, it's just some trivia,
that's
Keith.
Harsh. It's not that bad. Poor Celeste, you're making her sound like
we're cutting up audio. That's what we're doing here. Celeste, take it away. Trivia time with the deputy mayor. Mick Renheiser.
You got it. 35 years ago, the iconic Live Aid concert rocked the world in several major cities in 1985. To celebrate that anniversary, this week's trivia is about artists who performed at the Live Aid concert in 1985.
See, the toughest part of that is where did it happen? Now, everybody knows Wembley, but not everybody knows the other stadium was JFK Stadium in Philadelphia. That's not the Rose Bowl we're talking about there, but that's where this happened. All right, Mick, go ahead. We're ready.
Question number one, which blues guitarist, often referred to as the King of Blues, performed at Holland Studios during the 1985 Marathon concert? Was it Otis Redding, B.B. King, Stevie Ray Vaughan, or Freddie King?
I'm going to go if it was Sun Records was the one in Memphis, right? Holland Records. I'm going to guess Stevie Ray Vaughan because I don't know.
I'll go Otis Redding because I don't know at all.
Oh, my goodness. You guys are not blues fans. The King of Blues, that was a dead giveaway.
B.B. King?
Yeah.
Oh.
Well, that's why I thought he was. Yeah, I overthought it. Usually do. The King of Blues, I didn't know if that was in quotes or not, or that Celeste's feeling about blues.
Yeah, right.
No, that's what he was known.
Often oh, that's right. B.B. King, that's right.
It was a little red herring, we thought.
We overthink it. But see, she has done this to us for so long.
She knows how we do it.
We are gun shy. Uh-huh. B.B. and his guitar, Lucille. We know what we're talking about. It's pressure, Mick. It's pressure.
Redeem yourself in question two. Which hip-hop group from Queens, New York, famous for their collaboration of Aerosmith's Walk This Way, performed at Live Aid? Was it Public Enemy, Tribe Called Quest,
Represent,
Run DMC, or Outkast?
Keith, go with me on this one. It is Run DMC.
I'll go with Mike because he knows.
Run DMC, 100%.
Right. That was confident. He didn't need to phone a friend. He told you to stay with him, and he is correct.
This is DMC. Cash Cab. I've been on this one before.
That's right. Great video with Aerosmith and Run DMC knocking down the wall and finding each other.
I had no idea what you were even talking about, but thank you.
Don't worry about it, Keith. Well, only one more to go, then we're out of here.
One more to go.
If Lawrence Welk's involved, I can handle that one.
No, this one, Keith, of course, all these are in your era because you've lived a long time on this planet. I'm sure these are your particular areas of musical genre. Right. So let's try this one. Which former drummer for the band Genesis performed at Live Aid, having produced hits such as In the Air Tonight? Was it Ringo
Phil Collins,
Starr, Peter Gabriel, Lars Ulrich, or Phil Collins?
I'm going to say Phil Collins, but I don't know. Mike, who do you think?
It's definitely Phil Collins.
Do you know the band Genesis, Keith?
I don't even know Phil Collins.
Keith, their lead singer the lead singer of Genesis was Peter Gabriel was in Genesis, so that is accurate.
Well, that's where she could have gotten you, but
right. I thought Peter.
Confident answer: Phil Collins was the drummer, of course.
Not many drummers are lead singers, but that is Henley.
No, that's very unusual.
Don Henley and Phil.
Yep, Don Henley's one of them.
Dave Grohl for Foo Fighters. There's not a lot of them out there. Not a lot of them.
And here's a little trivia for you in the trivia question. Collins allegedly sent his ex-wife notice of their divorce by fax machine in the air tonight.
Oh, really? That's awesome. There's another funny thing. Didn't they land on the moon today or close to this?
1969?
Somewhere in there.
Yeah.
I don't know. Did they? Somebody
that's
said
a good question. 68, wasn't it?
One of those guys that was in space, not one of the famous ones.
Oh, Collins. There was a Collins that was in space, too.
No. Just back to Mick's point.
Oh, okay.
When he was in space, his wife went to the Houston court and got a no-argument divorce. That's
Hey, welcome home.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
You might have wanted to stay on the moon, honey, because
Little light on oxygen up there. Golf ball goes a long way, Mick. That's a good news. Hit it far and go find it. Our Zoom time is almost up, so we will jump out. Stay cool this weekend. The City Golf Tournament. Make sure everybody's hydrated. We'll have semifinals on Saturday, and then the championships on Sunday, and a new member of the Hall of Fame.
All right, guys, have a good one.
Take care.
Stay cool, my friend. We'll talk soon.
Thank you.